Hello and welcome back to the ILO's Future of Work podcast. I'm Sophie Fisher. The Paralympic Games have just opened in Paris, France. The first official Paralympics were held in Rome in 1960, and since then they have developed enormously. The Paris Games will feature a record number of delegations and there'll be 1,300 hours of live television coverage. That's comparable to the amount for the Olympics themselves. The Paralympics, like the Olympics, are often the high point of an athlete's career. But the life of an elite athlete is pretty tough, even more so for athletes with disabilities. Sporting careers can be short, many sports don't pay, and even more don't pay enough to live on. Plus, there's the question of working conditions. So, what is life like for a Paralympic athlete? Well, luckily today we have with us somebody who can tell us exactly what that's like, because Josh van de Vis was a former Paralympic athlete and bronze medalist in the 2012 Summer Paralympics in London. He is now co-chef d'équipe of the Canadian Paralympic team. Josh, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me today.
Yeah, and Josh is in Paris, and here with me in the studio is the ILO's Oliver Liang. Oliver is head of the Public and Private Services Unit in the ILO's Sectoral Policies Department, and his team also deals with the working conditions of service workers, which of course includes professional athletes. So, Oliver, welcome to you too. Thank you for being here.
Thanks. Hi, Sophie, and hi, Josh.
Right, Josh. You're in Paris, you lucky thing. Tell us about Paris. What's the atmosphere like?
Well, it's the city of lights, of course. The whole city is alive with the Paralympic spirit. We had the opening ceremonies, marching, walking, rolling down the Champs-Élysées from the Arc de Triomphe to the Place de la Concorde was incredible, outstanding. And this is the place to be, right? The Olympics and the Paralympics are one of the greatest things that our world has. And so there's nowhere else I'd rather be right now.
Yeah. And you're a former competitor and now you're the chef d'équipe. Do you miss the competition?
Well, I mean, I do miss competing. You know what I don't miss is preparing. I don't miss the training and I don't miss the weeks and months away from my family traveling to compete. But I am looking on with some envy to the next generation of bocce athletes, especially on our Canadian team. They're going to do us incredibly proud. My sport was bocce. It's one of the two sports in the Paralympics only. It doesn't have an Olympic counterpart. It's a precision sport. Leather balls on a hard indoor court, kind of like curling or pétanque or lawn bowling. You know, I loved it. I finally pulled off a bronze medal in London 2012, as you said. I also competed in Athens 2004, just missed qualifying to Beijing by one single point at the World Championships. So that's just a millimeter too close or too far.
A millimeter too far. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to come back to that in a minute and about the, you know, the strains and the, what it takes out of your life to compete at this level. But let me just move you on a bit. What do you think that the Paralympics has done to, affect the perception of the general public, of people with disabilities in general and athletes with disabilities in particular? Do you think it's enhanced that perception?
Well, I'm always thinking, trying to identify which inclusion initiatives actually make an impact, actually move the needle. In diversity work, diversity, equity, and inclusion, a lot of the initiatives don't actually do anything or they make discrimination worse. Is the great frustration. And so I do think that the Paralympic Games helps with disability inclusion. It's millions of hits, videos, images, stories of athletes who are proud of their disabilities. And that kind of disability pride is something that people don't often see. I think it's such a startling thing that it really does shift attitudes.
Yeah, the level of achievement is extraordinary. But in the past, the Paralympics has been associated with an image of athletes with disabilities as they've been characterized as superhumans. But that's a bit controversial, and some people reject it, don't like it. What do you think of it? Do you think it's misleading, or do you think it's helpful?
Well, I've spent a lot of hours thinking about this over the years. It's a very interesting line of thought. So the problem you can run into is when you start thinking about superheroism just being about having a disability. So if you're a superhero just for existing while disabled, that can be problematic. It's not heroic to be disabled and have a bank account or go and purchase a meal at your local restaurant with your family and friends. It's not an act of superheroism to be disabled and have a job. But what is superhuman is the incredible athletic performances on the world stage of Paralympians, just like of Olympians. And it gets tricky. The issue, in my view, is when you start to see the baseline change. So if you start to think that just to recognize someone for their baseline humanity when they're disabled, if they have to be a Paralympian, if they have to be a inspirational speaker and lawyer and leader just to get basic recognition as a human being, that's where it's very problematic. But I also think it's problematic to not celebrate the superheroic exploits of Paralympians.
Mm. Now, you talked earlier about, you know, the commitment that being a Paralympian requires. You've, as it were, got a day job now, which is Director of Diversity at Vancouver Airport. So you've managed to build a successful career outside athletics. And you're also, I think, a qualified lawyer. How difficult was it when you were, as it were, a practicing Paralympic athlete to balance these two things? Because in addition to achieving athletic success, you also have to make a living.
Well, I was in law school still when I was competing in London 2012 at the University of British Columbia. I was going there part-time, which is sort of rarely given permission to go part-time, but they allowed it since I was a Paralympian. And it's all about attitude. I always saw that sport was going to be a stepping stone for me in my career. And so I did go to university, did my undergrad, and then went on to law school, which is a second degree in Canada. And I really believe that having those two intense things in my life at the same time, both doing my studies and competing on the international stage, I do think that they helped each other, that being a student made me a better athlete and being an athlete made me a better student. I also had the incredible support of my family, my wife. She's a retired fencer herself from Lithuania. She came to Canada many years ago, but she competed on the Lithuanian national fencing team. She was working as a dental hygienist, luckily, when I was doing my sport career, and she just made it possible for me to gallivant around the world because she really knew the power of sport.
Right. Okay. At this point, let me bring in Oliver Liang to give us a bigger perspective. Because Oliver, from the ILO standpoint, athletes are workers, right? Professional athletes are workers, and they are entitled to the same rights as every other worker. But, you know, there are particular problems here, obviously, in balancing careers. So what are some of the challenges you see them facing in creating that balance? What about issues such as voice and being heard, and of course, occupational safety and health and things like stress?
That's absolutely right, Sophie. Back in 2020, the ILO actually had a meeting on professional athletes where it was agreed by the tripartite constituents that professional athletes are workers and that they enjoy fundamental principles and rights at work, which means for the ILO, as you know, protection from forced labor and child labor, non-discrimination, and then, of course, promotion of freedom of association and collective bargaining and occupational safety and health. So I think these are really important issues in the world of sports and also, of course, in Paralympic sports. I mean, a lot of athletes get their income through sports or a lot of identity, even if it's things like endorsement deals. So it's important that they have freedom of association. It's great to see that Josh was head of Athletes Can, which is an important organization in representing athletes. To engage in social dialogue with governing bodies in sports. As you pointed out, occupational safety and health is a big issue. We know there's a lot of stress in sports, the enormous training hours, the potential for abuse, especially of young athletes, on top of the mental stress. These are things that have a labor dimension, and it's important that we address those.
Because, of course, some athletes in sports, areas such as gymnastics and stuff are indeed very young. So there are particular issues related to those, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in any sport where you have a lot of authority by governing bodies, but also by coaches over young athletes, and as you said, sometimes kids, it unfortunately can lead to some situations, well, it has led to some horrible situations of abuse. And I think social partners have a big role in making sure that there's better governance of these kinds of activities.
And of course, the issue of freedom of association is a particularly complex one here, because by definition, the people in this industry are competing against each other.
Right. And a lot of them are not employees. They're not like football or basketball and team sports, where you often have an employee, a very clear employee relationship. They are independent workers to many degrees. But for the ILO, it's still important that these workers have at least the fundamental protection of certain rights.
Okay, so tell us some of the things that the ILO is doing to improve work-related standards for professional athletes, whether they're athletes with disabilities or otherwise, and of course other people in the sports industry, because it's a multi-billion dollar industry. Not everybody is an athlete.
Absolutely. It's important, of course, the ILO does work a lot on disability inclusion and the promotion of rights of persons with disabilities in the field of work, which of course includes sports. And for athletes in particular, it's a new area for the ILO, but certainly promoting social dialogue is one of our key aspects. For example, there is a collective agreement now between the football unions and the professional leagues in football, which the ILO supports, through technical advice on such issues as non-discrimination and occupational safety and health. And we hope to promote social dialogue in other fields as well. We recently published a brief on fundamental principles and rights at work, which is available on the web for people who want to find out more. So it's certainly an area that we'd like to expand in.
Yeah, great. Josh, you've been competing in the athletics industry at a high level for quite a long time now. I mean, what changes have you observed in how Paralympic athletes are supported during their athletic career and, of course, in preparation for life after that athletic career?
Well, there's a real shift. The sports systems of all the different countries are realizing that some active intervention is needed. In Canada, we have Game Plan. It's called an initiative of the sports system, which has all sorts of programming that helps athletes plan for their retirement, for their transition after sport to a career, and helps them with networking and job opportunities. You know, in my view, it's really about shifting the narrative and the thinking at its most fundamental level, which is that you don't need to only focus on sport when you're an athlete. It's completely okay. It's not even neutral. It's positive to focus on your career after sport, to either do your studies while you're an athlete or to plan when you're going to do your studies in your long-term planning. It makes you a better athlete in my view. And so it's about making sure that your whole identity is not wrapped up in being an athlete. It's such an important part of who we are, and it gives us so many transferable skills in the workplace to be competing for the sake of competing, doing work for the sake of doing work. That's something that we really struggle with, athletes, when we go into the workplace. We're used to doing things at, you know, 98, 99% of our capacity. And then all of a sudden in the office, everyone's going at 7% and we're just so confused.
If you were pitching a Paralympic athlete to an employer, what are those transferable skills that you would pitch?
Well, it's the performance under pressure and it's the chasing of goals. I mean, it's KPIs in the workplace. Our eyes often glaze over when we hear about KPIs, but that's what athletes excel at.
Right. Okay. And commitment, obviously, and the ability to push through difficult times.
Indeed.
Yeah. Great. Well, listen, that was fascinating. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful time in Paris. I'm sure you will. And as I say, we wish we were with you. But for the moment, that is all we have time for this Future of Work podcast. My thanks to Josh van der Vies from the Canadian Paralympic team and Oliver Liang from the ILO. And thank you to you too for your time and your attention. Please join us again soon for another Future of Work podcast. Meanwhile, you can always catch up with us on social media. We're on LinkedIn, we're on X and on Instagram. So until the next time, from me, Sophie Fisher, goodbye.